Hello and welcome to the Uplifting Content Podcast. I'm your host and the founder of Uplifting Content, Ione Butler. And in each episode, I'll be speaking to a special guest about a topic that matters. Enjoy the show. Just before we get started with today's fabulous guest, I wanted to let you know about some of the things that we've got going on in Uplifting Content. So my guest today is offering a giveaway of an hour coaching session to two of the people here. So make sure that you enter that. And also we give away so many fantastic things on Uplifting Content. If you just go to the website, upliftingcontent.com, look for engage and contests. And I say contests, but it's not a contest. You just enter and then we pick a winner after a month. So make sure that you go and just check stuff out. You've got to be in it to win it and all that good stuff. So without further ado, I'm pleased to introduce you all today, Robert Kandel. Robert, how are you this morning?
I'm excellent. So happy to be on the show with you.
Me too. And everyone, I'm excited to talk today to Robert because we're going to be talking about sex and intimacy and relationships, which I think sometimes people can feel is a bit of a taboo subject. But I actually love talking about it because it's important to, and it isn't something that we should be ashamed of and fear expressing. So before we get into all of that, it would be really lovely if you could, Robert, just tell everybody a bit about who you are, your story, what you do. I'm going to be sharing this Facebook Live and putting some of the details into the chat. So ignore me if I look like I'm doing this.
Okay, no worries. My story is I used to be normal. I was a normal person until I was around 28. Really following my father's path, you know, through good colleges, up the corporate ladder, was in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, suit and tie every single day. But really not connected to who I was. I was really living kind of my father's dream rather than my own dream. So I was overweight. I was married. I had a house in San Francisco, but disconnected from my wife. And then at the age of 28, I went to Burning Man in 1998.
I'm getting ready for it. Are you going next week?
No. Is this your first time?
No, fourth.
Okay. So yeah. This is my first time. It was 1998 at the time.
Ooh, so different.
And so old school. And it was just a mere like 18,000 people. It wasn't as popular. And the only thing I knew about Burning Man was this one picture book that we had. And in that picture book, there were like, you know, pictures. And there was one picture that stayed in my mind was there was a bunch of people naked walking around encrusted in mud. I guess there was some kind of mud bath there in the old days. And I was looking at this picture book and I was like, oh, that is so not me. That's for those other people, those hippies and those massage therapists and those doulas. And I was like, ugh. And then about a week later, my wife, my first wife said, hey, do you want to go? And I was like, all right, I'll go. And I was really just going for her to make her happy. That was my intention. And so about a month later, we're going to Burning Man, drive up, open the car, get out of the car. And then something happened where I felt the warm winds and I heard the drums in the distance and the words came, you're home. And I was like, no, I'm a yuppie. This is not home, but the words came home. And then since we're talking about sexuality, I'll tell you about the second important thing that happened at Burning Man. Was a couple of days in, Carol, my first wife, said to me, hey, there's a camp that has orgies.
The orgy dome.
It was back then, it was called Delilah's.
Ah, that sounds nicer, actually.
Delilah's. And they were known for their grilled cheese and their orgies. And so Carol said, do you want to go to an orgy? You know, and we had never, ever talked about anything sexual to begin with, let alone going to an orgy place. Now, I had a very secret life of porn and fantasy and desire and group sex that I hadn't told anyone. So all day I'm thinking about it and looking forward, Delilah's, you know, thinking about, you know, am I going to have sex with another woman? Am I going to kiss another woman? Am I going to see sex? And so, you know, 11:30 at night, we rode up on our bikes, open up the flaps. I'm ready for the Roman orgy in front of me. And instead there were 200 guys and 3 women. The worst high school party ever.
It's very different now. I think only men can go with women. But
right.
So what happened with these 200 men?
Well, all of a sudden, Carol was really popular and I was not very popular. So we walked around and there was like one couple in the corner having sex with like 100 guys watching and dreaming. And so we're like, okay, let's get out of here. So I'm walking dejected, you know, lost the orgy possibility. And walking around, And then what happened was the life-changing experience was that Carol and I started to have our first honest conversation around our sex life. It had always been sort of taboo. Like you said, it always been secret. It's not something we'd ever talked about. You know, it was like Jewish guilt made Roman Catholic shame. It was like impenetrable. She used to get dressed behind. She wouldn't get undressed in front of me. There was so much blocking. And on this talk, we started having an honest conversation. And then one of the things I said was, hey, I don't think you're the last woman in my life I want to kiss. And she says, you're definitely not the last guy in my life I want to kiss. I was like, really? And all of a sudden, we started to have this conversation that launched the rest of my life. So then we went back to San Francisco. This was San Francisco in the, you know, the end of the 20th century. It was a really amazing time. There were sex positive communities starting to come out. There was dance, there were raves, and we jumped right in. And about 6 months, 7 months after the Burning Man, then I took my first class on sexuality, had my ego handed to me, start to explore, and really threw myself into this question about myself and who I was as a man and my sexuality. In 2004, I co-founded an organization called One Taste, started in San Francisco, turned it from a paper napkin sketch into an 8-figure international business, teaching the world about female orgasm, relationship, intimacy, and communication. Got burnt out, left the organization in 2014, sold my shares, ended up in Venice Beach, California with a blank slate. And since then, I've been very busy. I have a business consulting, helping small businesses, a life coaching practice. I do a podcast. I think I'm on episode 152. And I'm also writing my first book, which is coming out November 5th. And the book is called Unhidden, A Book for Men and Those Confused by Them.
All fabulous stuff. Okay.
Thank you.
There's so many things I want to touch on. First of all, this whole conversation about, you know, the first time you opened up to your wife at the time about what you felt like or fantasies and things like that. I was recently at an event in Italy and we had this fantastic woman get up and do a little presentation similar to this, and had people talking about their sexual fantasies. She had this kink list, and you can go through the kink list, and we got into small groups of four people that we kind of felt comfortable sharing with, and would share something on the list either that we've done or would like to try, and kind of would talk about that. And I can talk about anything. I pretty much don't have any shame. I'm quite open and honest. But there was one woman in particular who was giggling. I can't even remember what the thing was on her kink list. It was something really kind of small in my mind. And she was just giggling and laughing because she'd never had that conversation before. And it blows my mind that there are so many people who don't. And as soon as you just start to open up and share, it's phenomenal. And I guess because there's all of the kind of conditioned ideas that you were mentioning before and sort of religious reasons and just whatever reasons people don't want to share. But with your coaching and stuff like that, how have you found, and I'm guessing that this is a topic that you speak to people on, how have people changed by just voicing fantasies or interests or stuff like that? I mean, I think you've got firsthand information with that.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll put the lens back a little bit. And sexual fantasy and desire is pretty much one of the hottest topics of it. But let's pull the lens back even a little bit more, because we're actually trained to be mediocre communicators. We're trained to lie, withhold, worry about the other person's ego. In my world, in my lineage, withholding is lying. So if you have a thought or a feeling and you don't tell your partner, you're lying in my book, which is against societal concept that says you're supposed to withhold. You're supposed to hold it in. You're not supposed to be too big. You're supposed to fit into each other's expectations of who we're supposed to be. But to me, the lying is the cancer of all relationships and why most relationships tend to not succeed. There are more single people in the United States than coupled adults in the first time in our history.
Wow.
A couple of years ago, we hit like 50.1% of single people. People are not engaging relationship. People are getting married later. People are having kids later. There's a huge statistical evidence of the change. And a lot of it is because people look at relationships and think, this isn't worth it. Or I can't be myself in this relationship. And so we're setting the bar higher. And at the same time, we're telling less truth, which is leading to a lot of disruption in terms of modern relationships.
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting you say that withholding is lying, because I had this conversation a while ago. I feel like the idea that you cannot feel attracted to somebody else, or that you can be in a relationship for 50 years of your life and have no ever interest or think of someone, right. I think is unrealistic. And, you know, the shame that I think people feel when you hide that information is worse than just saying, being able to have that communication and a conversation about, I'm having these feelings. I'm not saying that I need to go off and do this, but can we discuss it? Can we be open to these ideas? Like, just being able to do that, putting things on the table. And you're right, everybody in relationships, it's like, you have to be the way that I want you to be, otherwise it doesn't work. And we have to be open to these things. One of the things I really wanted to touch on when you spoke before about your ex-wife being not wanting to get changed, that body confidence is a huge thing, I think, especially for women. I had a friend whose girlfriend never got changed in front of him. They always had sex in the dark. Her father, every time he saw her, would make a niggling comment about her weight or her appearance. Every single time she saw her father, he would say something about her appearance, mostly her weight. And that is just a huge thing that I feel is so damaging to people. What's your advice, or what kind of, how do you work with people that have those types of issues?
Well, just for the record, men have a lot of body issues too. And so not to diminish at all women and their body issues. I'm not trying to say this or that.
No, and I totally agree with you. I feel like, yeah. I'm sorry, I just get so excited. I 100% agree with you, men do. I think that for women, so much is based on our appearance.
True.
That we have. And for men, it's more about providing and being strong and tough.
Yes.
But I 100% agree with you. Men struggle with this too.
Right. And so we live in a society that women, it's culturally normal for women to be able to speak about body issues. Men aren't given that space. And my book is really just an experience of the prison that men live in, because we're not allowed to have feelings. We're not allowed to complain. We're not allowed to have issues. You know, most people look at men as the white, cisgendered, the patriarchy. We have everything. What do you have anything to complain about? Just like a rich man can't complain about their family life, but there's a lot of issues there as well. So my point is that just to bring what's inside out, to provide the environment, to provide the container, so your partner can tell you everything. That is, to me, a mandatory requirement for any relationship that wants to be masterful. Mm. Without the space to reveal, and that goes from sexuality to desire to fear, to anger, to, you know, my wife once told me she doesn't like the way I wash dishes. And my ego was like, but I was so grateful, because I was just like, this is my second wife, Morgan. I was so grateful, because instead of her holding it in, thinking, mentally thinking, wash the dishes, wash the dishes, wash the dishes. She's like, I would appreciate it if you did this, this, and this. And I'm like, I would be glad to. Thank you for letting me know. And that extends to our relationship and into the bedroom.
Now, how does that work when there's a disagreement in that? And does that not mean that if someone's constantly saying, I don't like the way you have your hair, or I don't like, where does it become a problem? Because I feel like if someone's constantly has an issue with how you do everything, and then is that not the right relationship to be in, but at least you know about it?
Well, do you mind if I diagnose you a little bit?
Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah, so, this is fun.
Okay. So communication is my game. So the three parts of every communication, there's the content, the words, the written words, the emojis, there's the intonation of the voice, the modulation, the speed, the frequency. Then there's the intention behind it. What was the motivation behind the communication? This is also known as nonverbal communication. So when you said, I don't like your hair, the intonation of your communication is actually slightly, not greatly, but slightly challenging and slightly antagonistic. When I talk about improving a relationship, I'm talking about what I call collaborative communication. Two forms, collaborative, antagonistic. Most people withhold their truth to the point where it's boiling over. Why can't you, can I curse on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Why won't you just fucking take out the garbage? Antagonistic. If you start to tell the truth in real time, it comes out collaborative. Hey, honey, would you mind taking out the garbage? Yes. Or to go back to your example, hey, honey, I'm just noticing your hair seems a little out of whack. You asked me to look out for your personal experience, appearance and reflect you. And I'm like, collaborative. Oh God, I'm so grateful, because God knows my wife definitely is like, no, those shirts and those shoes or those pants. And it's collaborative. That's the difference. And that's where the relationship can grow.
I can definitely hear that. Thank you. That's it makes sense. You can hear the difference in just the way you say it. Mm-hmm. Great point. Just checking in with some of the people on the call today. Hello, Laurelie, Tiffany, lovely to see you, Frank. We've got a comment from Ben who says, don't really know that withholding is lying. I can see you saying this one. Don't really about the withholding is lying. I learned the hard way that some feelings are better left unsaid with your partner if it doesn't relate to them. Telling your partner all your secrets can be a burden and it's unnecessary. Some of the things are better left for sharing with a friend or a counselor. Thoughts on that, Robert?
Great. Thank you so much. Of course, you know, when I teach this, it has a different form. So thank you. Mm. So withholding is lying. And a very important and. Do your internal work first. Do the work for yourself. So what I do is I have 1,000 feelings and 1,000 thoughts in a day. And then I'll go to my therapist, or I'll talk to my friend, or I'll do my journaling, or I'll do my self-introspection. And those 1,000 thoughts will shift down to 50. And of that 50, maybe I'm going to wait a day and really work it and go internal. And of that 50, maybe 20 are things that I feel like I really need to communicate. You know, the fantasy about that coffee girl, the girl at the coffee shop, the woman at the coffee shop, excuse me. You know, this thing she said to me a week ago that's been kind of been stuck. And so of those 1,000 thoughts, distilling it down to those 20 things that you feel like you're withholding, and communicate those. And so I'm totally in agreement. It's an and. Do your internal work, distill it, and then reveal that to your partner.
So you're saying so even if you have this little fantasy about the person at work, that should be shared.
Right.
Oh, this is interesting, because I'm kind of rubbing up against that idea too.
Well, what would be your reason? You met someone at a coffee shop, you found them attractive, you're in a committed, serious relationship. What would be your motivation not to tell your partner about that?
I think it depends on the other type of person, the person. Okay. And having them feel insecure, or it leading to a whole kind of bunch of stuff. Because I can see it going a couple of ways. One, in that they're like, oh, cool, that's interesting. No, like, I don't know what you want to do with that. Or, cool, let's see if we can have her come around for coffee. Mm. Or it could be like, how dare you? You're disgusting. I should be enough for you, blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of that. I mean, I think it's dependent on the person, on the relationship. And if it's just like, I don't know, if it's just a passing fantasy, do we share all of our passing fantasies? And what if it's something that you're like, no way can I say this to anyone? Mm. Do you have to tell them?
Well, there's no have to. These are optionals and these are opportunities. And so thank you for saying that, because that's important. It's not like I'm standing over you with a whip or my client, tell the truth.
Withholding is lying.
Yeah, you're bad. No, it's not like that at all. It's like, okay, these are opportunities. Mm-hmm. These are opportunities to share some of the most interesting parts of yourself. Mm-hmm. We have so much fear around our sexuality. We have so much charge. We have so much judgment. Mm-hmm. We have so much disapproval. Mm-hmm. And we have so much fear that if we reveal this part of ourselves to who we call our best friend, they're mm-hmm. going to reject us. Their feelings are going to hurt. Their ego is going to get hurt. They're going to feel insecure. Or what happens a lot is that we diminish our partner by making the decision for them that they can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
So what we do is we hide, mm-hmm. we create facades, and then what our partner's relating to is a facade really than truly who we are. And guess what? They're doing the same thing. So we have facades in relationships rather than the truth. Now, I'm not saying vomit your truth without being deliberate. You know, if your partner comes home, they had a really rough day at work, they're exhausted. Wow, I had this really sexual fantasy about the guy at the coffee shop, and he was... No. You know, but at the same time, create the environment, create the communication pathways so you guys can reveal each other. Like, jealousy is it's a killer. It's literally can be a killer. Or, you know, what I learned was jealousy is 10% exclusion and 90% turn on. And what we do is we focus on the exclusion rather than the turn on. Right. So to all your points, yes, please go slow. Yes, be deliberate. Yes, ask for consent to share these parts. Create the circumstance. But at the end, when you withhold this, you're robbing your partner of who you are.
Beautifully said. Thank you. Thanks for clarifying. Okay.
Great question, by the way. Thank you.
Sure. So I wanted to touch on the company that you had that you sold. What was that called again? I wrote it down.
One Taste.
One Taste. I'll have all of these in the show notes, by the way, everyone. Mm-hmm. Okay. So One Taste, tell me about that.
Wow. That was an epic ride if I ever heard one. I started it in 2004 with a woman named Nicole Dadone. Nicole is by far pretty much the most brilliant person I've ever met in my entire life and creative. And she had done studies and research and communication and sexuality for years before me. So she was the vision and the ideas and the concept. I was the implementation, the organizer, the manager. Mm-hmm. And together we started with a paper napkin sketch to bring deliberate orgasm into the world conversation, to rework how women relate to sex, to show or offer a practice called orgasmic meditation, where one person with the most dexterous part of their body strokes the most sensitive part of a woman's genitals for 15 minutes. We can talk about that. And we had all these concepts. And out of our practice and out of this concept, a community grew. So from that one place in San Francisco at 7th and Folsom, we grew to having at the max 9 cities. I taught over 400 workshops, taught 10,000 students. Nicole has a TED Talk, I think has 1.7 million views at this point. She wrote a book and it went international. There's all these companies in the States. And in it was an epic journey for me from this nerdy, numb and dumb guy who didn't understand women at all to a man now who feels his own self-empowerment, who has sight, who can communicate, who can speak, who can hear what women are saying, not the words, the meta message, the message underneath the words, where I can have patience for the full range of a woman. And so it was an incredible epic journey for the 12 years I was involved.
Tell me the name of, what's Nicole's last name? We'll share the link to her TED Talk too.
Dadone, Daedone. Yeah.
Dadone. Now I've been fascinated by these types of workshops because you hear it described and you're like, what the hell is that all about? Mm-hmm. And so but I'm open-minded and haven't experienced it. What is the purpose of doing that? Like, how does that work? And it's my understanding that it's not even like a sexual thing, or is it a sexual thing?
I'll give One Taste a line. And I also really want to say that I've been out of the organization for over 4 years at this point.
Gotcha.
And so my information is antiquated and they've done a lot of work and really changed a lot of their processes to become more mainstream. So I just want to give that caveat. I'm very familiar from 2004 to 2014. And then my stream of information ends. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the practice, we didn't have it as a sexual practice. We had it as a sensual practice, because sexual has so much connotation. And when you take up one body part and involve a female's genitals, the upper left-hand quadrant of her clitoris, where the most neurons reside, people would just see that and think sex, sex, sex. And, you know, I would debate it, but not hold on to it. If people want to have that as sex, that's fine. But really, we wanted to pull the connotation. We wanted to turn it into a practice like yoga, like sitting meditation, like walking meditation, where the woman could just open her legs and relax and feel and receive and not have commerce, not have to do anything for the stroker. Let's just call him a guy to make this easy. Not do anything for the guy. And the guy, the stroker, he could just feel his finger going up and down and feel the awareness and then feel the orgasm, not her orgasm, the shared orgasm that existed between the two of us in our bodies, in my body. And then in that, I could know when to go lighter and when to go faster. And then to ask questions, to have overt communication around this. Would you like a lighter stroke? Would you like a softer stroke? And all I can tell you is I did 11,000 ohms, 11,000 15-minute ohms during my career. And the change was, now in sex, I know when to go slower, when to go faster, when to stop, when to ask a question, and because I have the bodily awareness of what's happening between us.
How does this affect people? I'm sure it's like changing relationships. I mean, just how, from what you were saying, it's pretty powerful. More people being more in tune. I feel like there's a lot of disconnected sex happening, and it sounds like this is bringing that connection back.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened in 2008 was something significant in society, and that was the availability of free porn. There's an incredible...
That was only 2008?
2008.
Wow.
Yeah. There was porn before, of course. But 2008, this guy named Fabian started to make available free porn. There's an incredible audiobook called The Butterfly Effect, mm-hmm. by John Ronsom, R-O-N-S-O-M. I think it's 4 or 5 hours long. Amazing about
writing it down.
Impact. Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. But what's happened in this 10 years is that more and more young people are getting their sex education from porn. Mm-hmm. A lot of men are getting addicted to porn. Mm-hmm. Porn affects your body and your brain chemistry. One thing in the butterfly effect, he said teenage pregnancy has dropped since the advent of free porn, but also male erectile dysfunction of guys in their 20s has skyrocketed. And so what happened with free porn is people got number and number, mm-hmm. you know, visually thinking this is what sex should look like. Women are just like, this is not what I want, mm-hmm. but not having the courage. Mm. Girls, and I use girls deliberately here, are having sex earlier because the guys are expecting it because they're watching porn at 13 and 14, 11, 12, 13. So it's really been a mayhem on society. So the practice slowed everything down and brought it down to one small surface, the tip of my finger to one small surface, her clitoris, and stroking in collaboration, there's that word again, in collaboration for the most sensation for both of us. And then when the bond is created from this practice, without the commerce, without the woman thinking, I have to make the guy happy or get him off, all of a sudden there was a collaboration, then all the other sex acts, the end of all the other sex acts, increased significantly. And then the relationship helped as well. So it was an amazing practice. It wasn't for everyone. You know, I don't want to say this is a panacea. You know, there wasn't for everyone, but for the people who are deep in the practice, significantly altered their lives.
Thank you so much for this, because it's definitely been something that I've heard about but didn't really know about. And hearing you talk in this way, it's definitely got me intrigued even more. Ben says, I've tried this practice after hearing about it from Tim Ferriss. It really does help.
I trained him, Tim Ferriss.
Amazing.
Yeah. Good, great student. Great guy.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Just going back to our stuff about sharing, Tiffany says, I'd much rather my hubby tell me about attractions, flirtations, or people hitting on him. If it comes up later, I feel that somehow we miss the opportunity to connect. I'm not threatened with that kind of honesty. Now, I do have some trust issues, but that's a different story. Thanks for sharing, Tiffany. Charles says, I don't feel you should tell everyone those thoughts. You have sometimes to keep things for yourself. And that's what we did say. Robert did say, yeah, there's not, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Can I just reiterate that, Charles? Like, please, please, this is a personal practice. Find the edge of uncomfort, you know, the discomfort, but please never bypass your boundaries to do something that you're against. So I just want to make sure that that's communicated. So thank you for saying that.
Perfect. Cool. Thanks for going into the OM stuff. Now, just to finish up, we'd love to hear like where people can find out about what you're working on now. So you've got the Tough Love podcast in the background, I see there. You've got your book coming out in November and your coaching. How can people kind of connect with you and work with you?
Well, I'm also teaching a communication course in Los Angeles on September 22nd. And I'd love to add that to our list, maybe, you know, to people, give 2 free tickets for that. I'd be really happy.
Amazing.
Yeah. And if you want to come, I'd be honored if you'd be my guest.
I would love to be your guest.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Thank you. No, I love things like that. So what's the date?
September 22nd.
Yeah.
Everything can be found at my website, robertcandell.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can pre-order the book. Mm-hmm. You can hear the podcast. The podcast is on iTunes. And also, there's a free solicitation or set up an appointment on there as well. And this is not just about sales. You know, of course, if you're interested in working with me, that's the best way to connect. But if you just want to chat or get, I'm always happy to talk to people. So you can contact me just if you want to chat. I'm really here to be of service to the world. And so that's on my website as well in the contact form.
This is awesome. We will get all of that updated and have it all in the show notes to take into effect everything you've just said there. So Robert, this has been so much fun. Thank you for just sharing all this new information with myself and everybody and just being so honest and open and authentic.
My absolute pleasure. Fabulous. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Guys, this has been great. I will see you all soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifting Content Podcast with me, Ione Butler. I record these episodes live on the Uplifting Content Facebook page every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific. So if you want to be part of the conversation, join our Facebook Live to share your thoughts and questions. Make sure that you're subscribed so that you get updated with the latest episodes twice a week, every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. It really helps us to reach more people and more listeners. So once you've done a review, email us a screenshot of your review to info@upliftingcontent.com and we will send you a special gift to say thank you. Lastly, the only way that you'll ever get notified from me is if you sign up for my weekly-ish email, which will have information about all our giveaways, what I'm up to, who's coming up on the interviews, just all the good stuff that you don't want to miss. So that's it. We'll have links to all that information in the show notes, and I look forward to hearing from you and